A year ago, we talked to Sarah Jane, a vet from Marwell Zoo in the UK, about the effect that COVID was having on zoos. In this episode of the Vet Podcast, recorded late April 2021, we talk to her again and ask, what effect has the pandemic had on the animals, conservation, and the viability of zoos?
You are listening to the Vet Podcast, presented by veterinarian Dr. Brian Greger from New Zealand. Join us as we discuss pet health issues from around the world.
Are you a veterinarian dreaming about working down under in New Zealand? If so, I'd love to help you make that dream come true. Hi, I'm Julie South of VetStaff. VetStaff is New Zealand's only recruitment agency specialising in the Kiwi veterinary sector. We can help you find your dream job down under, from short-term locum assignments through to permanent employment and residency. Because we know God's own Aotearoa New Zealand like the back of our hands, we can match your career aspirations with a clinic that'll suit you best. Whether you're planning to work here for a few months or forever. If it's got anything to do with working in a vet clinic in New Zealand, we can help. vetstaff.co.nz.
This time last year, we were talking to you, Sarah Jane, about the effects that COVID was having on the zoo. We were hoping that it was only a short-term blip. I think we were a little bit wrong there. It's been a hell of a year, been a really long year worldwide. Sarah Jane, just remind us where you were at this time last year and what's happened in the year since.
Yeah, you're right. It has been quite a year. So when I spoke to you last year, we were in the first national lockdown. So Marwell Zoo was closed to members of the public. And at the stage at which I spoke to you, it turned out we had another 2 months pretty much until we reopened to the public. So we've been closed at various times throughout the year in line with government guidelines. So we've had three national lockdowns in the UK now. So I guess going back to the beginning of the pandemic, we closed at the end of March and then we reopened early July. Initially, it was only the outdoor areas, but we were able to open up the indoor areas and catering and animal houses in line with government guidelines a little bit later on in the year before we were forced to close again. For a month from the 4th of November to the 4th of December, which is when we had our second national lockdown. Coming out of that national lockdown, the UK was then divided into tiers with varying degrees of restriction based on what the COVID risk was deemed to be in your area. So Hampshire was put into tier 4, which was the highest level before you went into a full lockdown. So from, I think it was December the 24th, we had to close all of our indoor spaces. So again, it was outdoor only. But then after Christmas, the government announced we were going into a full national lockdown, which started on the 4th of January. So the zoo has been closed again for another 4 months. We reopened our outdoor spaces again just last week on the 12th of April.
Being animal health professionals, I guess probably the very first question that we have to ask, because our job is looking after the animals. Were there any physical health issues with any of your animals due to COVID?
No. We haven't had any suspected or confirmed cases of COVID in any of our animals at Marwell. Before we reopened, we sat down and risk assessed each species that we had within the zoo. Obviously, that was very early days. So that was May last year, June last year, we did that risk assessment. You know, I still feel like every day we're learning something new about this virus. So we sort of did it in the knowledge that this was going to be quite a dynamic risk assessment that we would have to update quite frequently. But we looked at the higher risk animals based on the information we had at the time, which would have been our older primates, our big cats, mustelids. So like otter species and mink and so on. And for the higher risk animals, we assessed that the chances of them catching COVID from a member of public or giving it back to a member of public was pretty much negligible because there's no contact between our animals and the public. Some of those higher risk animals were in walkthrough exhibits. So we have a lemur walkthrough, but of course we took the decision to keep that closed to members of the public. And then we also assessed the risk of them catching COVID from a keeper to be low, maybe a bit higher than a member of the public, but still nothing that would be overly concerning. Again, because our keepers don't have a lot of contact, very close contact with the animals because they're non-domesticated. And if they did have to be in the back of house areas with those animals or in close contact with them, they would wear FFP3 masks. So it was very well risk assessed, and we've been updating that risk assessment as more information has come to light. So I'm not aware of any zoo animals that have had COVID in the UK, but certainly there have been reports coming out of the States and Europe of big cats, great apes. And just today, actually, there was a report of a group of otters in the US that have tested positive for COVID after showing some very mild respiratory signs. So there are cases of it, but fortunately we haven't had any in our collection.
I guess a zoo being a zoo, the reason that you're there, one of the reasons that you're there is for the general public to come and have a look at the animals. So with the zoo being closed to the public, there would be a real change in the number of people coming past the animals. Has that made any difference for the better or for the worse with your exhibits?
So we started collecting data at the beginning of the pandemic, and we've done it through each national lockdown, each time the zoo has been closed. We're still in the process of analysing that data. But anecdotally, we have seen some changes. None of them have been overly concerning, but we have noticed them. So species that are a bit flighty, such as some of our hoofstock species, and they do seem to be a bit calmer when we don't have visitors in the park. Whereas we've noticed, certainly in the last week, our primates, such as our gibbons, they're suddenly a lot more interested in what's going on around them now that people are back in the park, which I think would suggest that they sort of enjoy people watching and do get some enrichment from seeing people come through. And then we've got species like birds and reptiles, my favourite species, but no, we've not seen any sort of change in their behaviour based on people coming through. As I said, we haven't seen any significant issues, and hopefully we won't have any more national lockdowns and we'll be able to analyse all that data and see what's going on.
You say that you've seen a few minor differences. Species related, or is it an individual animal or an individual animal effect?
I guess the most noticeable is species related, but I would suspect within those species you'll also have individual differences. So again, with our hoofstock, we tend to find that when things are a little bit quieter, maybe they're a little bit calmer, whereas they become a bit more, you know, they sort of go towards the back of the exhibit when there are more people in. But I think just because of the way herds work, you'll always get a few more confident individuals, and maybe they'll be the ones that are a little bit further at the front.
Actually, I might be showing my ignorance here a little bit. Do animals show normal behaviour anyway in a zoo because they are born in captivity?
I think there is a degree of, so like, habituation with wild animals in captivity, but zoo animals, you know, they're very different to domestic animals. Just because they're in captivity doesn't mean they're domesticated. So they still retain a lot of their wild behaviour. So, for example, if our big cats have the opportunity, you know, like if a wild bird flies into the exhibit, they will hunt it and they will eat it. So that's still sort of a wild instinct that they have. So I think we could assume to varying degrees that species will maintain those types of wild behaviours when it comes to interactions with people as well.
With the knowledge that the gates were going to be open to the public, did you have to retrain the animals, or did you have to do anything to get them used to visitors coming through again?
Each time that we've closed and reopened, in the week sort of running up to reopening, we've invited all of our volunteers and our furloughed staff to come into the park and have a look around. You know, they get to see their work colleagues again, get to see these animals that they've been away from for a while. And I guess they look different to the people that are still working throughout lockdown, because they'll come in not in their uniform. They'll maybe move in a different way to the keepers. So they'll be in places that you wouldn't always see the keepers, and they'll stop and stare a lot more often than the keepers would. So I think that in itself helps. when we reopen, we're only allowed to have a reduced number of visitors come through the gate to comply with social distancing measures. So one of the decisions that our zoo has taken is when we reopen, we don't open straight at that number. We start a little bit more reduced from that, and then we gradually build it up over a few weeks. So even though there are more people around, it's something we're doing to try and get them a little bit more habituated but used to having a huge number around, just building it up gradually.
Let's have a quick look at the work that you actually do, Sarah Jane. With the lockdown, has your workflow and the type of work that you are doing changed?
It did in the beginning, and I think that was because we didn't really know how long this was going to be going on for. I can remember when we started working from home, we just all said, oh, yeah, we'll see you in 3 weeks. And, you know, 12 months later, I still haven't seen some of my colleagues other than on a screen in a meeting. We have very much been led by the guidance from the Royal Veterinary College. So their advice at the beginning of the pandemic was to move to emergency work only, which was what we did. So we work from home. So we were not on site, and then we were using technology in order to sort of triage things sort of over video calls, and we get sent photos and emails from the keepers, and we sort of triage them remotely. If we could make a diagnosis based on what we were seeing, we would then put a prescription up or would then arrange for a time to go in and meet the keeper. But as that, it sort of became obvious that this wasn't a 3 week thing or even a 3 month thing, we decided to risk assess each bit of work as it came up. Just by the very nature of the animals that we look after, zoo veterinary work is very different from general practice. So we can't get hands-on with our animals. It's not as easy as just walking up to them and having a look at them. And they are wild animals, so they are very good at hiding signs of illness and injury. So quite often when you notice it, it can be a little bit further on in the disease process than maybe it would be when you picked it up in a domestic animal. I guess the other thing that was different for us is that the situation in which we worked in was quite different to general practice. So the keepers were still working every day, so we were being exposed to the same people every day. It wasn't like we had new people turning up all the time. So I guess effectively we were like in a big zoo bubble. And of course our animals didn't need to be transported to us. We could just go to the zoo. And because Marwell does have a lot of hoofstock, that's probably the greatest number of species we have are hoofstock species. They're in big open paddocks. So it was quite safe for us to stand at the side of the paddock, socially distanced from a keeper, sort of in the open air. So yeah, we did move to more of a risk assessment based way of working from around summer last year, and we continue to do that even now. So in times of national lockdown, we try to put off sort of routine work that we would need to get external help for, so hoof work for our equids, or dental checks, because we have a dental specialist that comes in to help. So again, we try and do that when we're not in national lockdown. And then I guess the only other thing that has really changed is the number of people that we have around for procedures. So normally we quite like to get keepers involved. I think it's quite good for them to see what we do and to explain what's happening with their animals. But because of COVID now, we're sort of restricting the number of people that can be in one space, and everybody who's present has to wear FFP3 masks.
So I guess this is a million-dollar question. The viability of zoos to a reasonable extent would come from bums on seats, I suppose, from people paying their entrance fee and coming into the zoo. I know in New Zealand, the zoos, that the government gave something like $9.5 million New Zealand dollar subsidy or payment to wildlife centres, which was predominantly for natives and endangered species. How hard has the zoo population generally been hit in the UK? And I'm assuming there was some government funding?
Yes, there was. It has been a really tough 12 months. So as you said, we rely on people coming through the gates. So the pandemic has had a massive impact on zoos in terms of their future viability and conservation output. There was a government fund, which is called the Zoo Animals Fund. You know, it was very gratefully received when we heard that fund was being made available. But as time went on, it became quite apparent that that fund wasn't very easily accessible for the larger zoos that are sort of not-for-profit zoos that contribute a lot to conservation. So the fund focused primarily on animal welfare, but it didn't consider zoos holistically. So you could apply for that fund when you're in the last 12 weeks of your reserves. and the money could only be spent on things that were important to animal welfare, so keeper and vet wages, medication bills, feed bills, and things like that. But animal welfare was never going to suffer within the pandemic. That was one thing that had to stay at a high standard and that we had to keep doing. So we always had that outlay. So like, for example, at Marwell, it costs approximately £220,000 a month to care for our animals to a standard that is really high and that we're happy with. So we were sort of diverting money out of other areas like maintenance and catering and the shop to put into that. But if you applied for the zoo fund, you couldn't put the money back into those areas that you'd taken it out of. And I think whilst animal welfare is like, you know, as a vet, that is the most important thing to me. And I think everybody that works at the zoo would say that is the most important thing. But it's not the only thing that brings people into zoos. Like, people will come to your zoo if your animals look healthy and happy and have good welfare. But you know, for a zoo to fulfill its purpose of education and conservation and research, you need your education department. You need your ground staff to make your zoo look attractive. You need your maintenance team to make everything look safe. You need your catering staff. But there was no funding to put into those areas. And I think that was sort of where that fund fell quite short. There was another fund that, well, there is another fund that a lot of people have compared the Zoo Animals Fund to. It was the Cultural Recovery Fund for theatres, live music venues and so on. And this absolutely isn't me sort of dragging out that sector. Like, I'm a big fan of theatre and live music. But my understanding and is that if you applied for that fund, you could spend it however you needed to support your business, which is obviously quite different to the Zoo Animal Fund. And as of March this year, 90% of the Zoo Animals Fund remains unspent, whereas 4,000 cultural venues have been helped with the Cultural Recovery Fund, which is great. I just wish there'd been a bit more help for zoos.
So how have you got on at Marwell?
So for Marwell specifically, as I said, this last 12 months have been really tough. You know, we consider it to be the toughest year in our 50-year history. We've not faced anything like this previously. And we've lost about £6.8 million, which I think is over 13 million New Zealand dollars in income over the last 12 months, which has a massive impact potentially on our conservation output. When we last spoke, I remember feeling quite sort of optimistic and quite excited about opening. So I guess in my role as a vet, my primary concern is animal welfare. So I don't really have to, I have an appreciation of how much things cost, but it's not my job to sort of be aware of all the finances of the zoo. So I thought that we would open and maybe everything would be okay again. But it quite quickly became apparent really to me that just being open wasn't enough. And so, as I've mentioned previously, you know, when we do open, the number of people that we can have in the zoo is greatly reduced. So even when we're allowed the maximum number of guests to comply with social distancing, it's still under 50% of our usual capacity. Two of the national lockdowns, so the first one and the third one, have been over Easter, which is one of our busiest periods. The restaurant moved to takeaway service only. And then when people could come inside, there was a reduced number of tables, which potentially puts people off buying food. And a reduced number of people are out sort of into the gift shop as well. So that also had a big impact on our income. We do have an amazing executive committee at Marwell, and it's very much their job to be aware of the financial happenings at the zoo. And they've made some really tough decisions, but they have really steered us through this crisis. A lot of the staff at the zoo, I think pretty much all of us, have worked on temporarily reduced wages for a while. Processes have been streamlined, so unfortunately we have lost some of our non-animal staff to redundancies, which is really difficult. You know, Marwell has a real family feel about it as a company, so it's really difficult sort of knowing that you're not going to see those colleagues again. So I think, you know, whilst we are struggling, we're maybe in a slightly better position than they had anticipated, but it is still really difficult. But I think the whole team at Marwell has been great, sort of in playing their part in keeping the zoo going and hopefully securing our future as things start to return more to normal. You know, we accepted the temporary pay reductions, and we've even been helping with tasks outside of our job descriptions. So a couple of mornings last year, I went down to the giraffe house and I was sort of manning the doors and making sure we didn't have too many people in and we were compliant to social distancing measures. So we've all chipped in where we've needed to. And of course, our wonderful Just Giving page that I mentioned when we last spoke, that's still going. And our total's now reached £150,000, which I think is that like 290,000 New Zealand dollars, if my conversion is right. So again, just lots of wonderful support from our local community. And it's really nice to know that Māua means so much to them. People could donate to the Just Giving page, but they could also set up their own fundraisers that link back to ours. And you know, there was one little boy, I think he was about 7, he was taking commissions. So if you paid him, he would draw you a zoo animal. And I think he managed to raise a couple of £100, which I think is wonderful. You know, there was a lady that unfortunately sadly passed away last year, and her family asked for donations towards Marwell in her memory because she was very fond of the giraffe. And again, that raised over £2,500 for us. So yeah, lots of support, which I think has been, it's been really special for us to see that.
So there's the wee challenge for you guys, particularly if you are in the area of the zoo. Track down the Just Giving page for Marwell Zoo. And likewise, zoos around the world, I'm sure, are going through the same thing. I know that Arana Park and Wellington and Auckland Zoo here in New Zealand are struggling a bit. Track down the Just Giving type pages to your local zoo and give them a hand. Have the closures had any effect on the conservation projects that zoos are performing?
Yes. So I guess we can split sort of conservation output into two sections. So we have the education work that zoos perform. So at Marwell, we have an education team. They will teach classes, give tours. So obviously none of that can happen at the moment because we can't have children in the classrooms at the zoo. So the education output, I think, has decreased, but that team at Marwell has been really innovative and they've come up with some amazing online resources that they can send out to schools. So they've just found other ways of teaching, but I don't think it's quite, you know, in quite the numbers that it was before the pandemic. And then I guess if we look at the other side of conservation projects, which I guess is what we typically associate zoos with more, is putting money into in-situ conservation projects. The British and Irish Association of Zoo and Aquaria recently sent out their annual questionnaire to all member zoos. And some of the preliminary findings suggest that spending on conservation projects has decreased by 38% in the last 12 months. And research projects, their funding has been reduced by 57%. So yeah, I think it definitely has had quite a significant impact in terms of financing those.
So has it put any species that are now only found in zoos under a greater risk of extinction?
I think there, because there is a reduction in money going into conservation projects, we could maybe make that assumption, but I think it'd be quite difficult to predict that impact, and maybe we won't know until a couple of years down the line. I think the one thing that gives me hope is that over the last 12 months, we've found that people can be remarkably resourceful and they've come up with novel ways of working and achieving things. So I think even though there is less money going into conservation projects, I wouldn't be surprised to hear of novel ways of working in conservation and novel ways of raising money becoming more common as people try to sort of make the most of what's happening.
Have any zoos had to close?
Yes, we've lost a few zoos in the UK over the last 12 months. And I suspect, you know, as we said before, because opening, being open isn't enough, I suspect that we could lose more zoos over the coming years. So I think just if a zoo is open at the moment, it doesn't mean that it's completely out of the woods. Again, BIAZA, the British Irish Association of Zoo and Aquaria, started like a closure working group to support zoos that were facing closure, to help their staff, but also to help them rehome their animals. Zoos that have closed in the UK so far have successfully managed to rehome and translocate all of their animals to other zoos within the UK and within Europe. But the worry now is we've sort of been hit with a double whammy. So we've had the pandemic, and of course we have now left the EU, so we have Brexited, which makes moving animals in and out of Europe more difficult. There's more paperwork to do. It can be quite a prolonged process. So the worry at the moment is that we could lose more zoos and it could be more difficult to translocate these animals because it's a bit more difficult to get them in and out of Europe.
In the UK, I guess the sun's starting to shine, it's starting to warm up, the zoo's inviting people to come through and see them. what differences are people going to note when they come to your zoo now compared with a year and a half ago?
I think because we've been living with lockdowns and quite tight restrictions, what you will see when you come back to the zoo now maybe won't be as much of a shock as it would when you came back in the summer of 2020. In terms of COVID changes, at the moment our indoor areas are closed, but we suspect they will open from the end of May. But again, the doors will be manned and only a certain number of people will be allowed through at a time, so they should expect some queuing to be able to get into those animal houses. The restaurant for the foreseeable future, again, will be closed for takeaway only. There are social distancing markers, which for us are tiger prints that are painted on the floor to help people sort of keep distance from each other. Sort of those fun activities for children, like we have a tractor road train that can take people around the zoo and face painting, like they're not happening at the moment, unfortunately. But they're going to find our animals exactly as we left them. So our teams have been working throughout this crisis and we've been helping, you know, ensuring that our animals live the best captive life possible and maintaining their health and welfare. So, you know, you'll come back to see these animals that you're very fond of and have these attachments to. Marwell in particular has also branched out into some exciting new species. We've done quite a lot of renovation work on their habitats. So over the last 12 months, we have got Asian bantang. The best way of describing those is maybe like they're a mountain cow. So the females look a little bit like Jersey cows with horns. They're wonderful animals. I've also got Phocaean water pigs and Red River hogs. And we have swift parrots now as well, which are a very endangered species of parrot. I think primarily in Australia and Tasmania is where they hark from. And we have had a bit of a baby boom as well in the later half of last year. So there's lots of new individuals to see that are still in that sort of cute, gangly baby phase as well. So we've had a scimitar oryx calf, a Dorcas gazelle calf. We've had some foals. So we have a Somali wild ass and two Hartmann zebra foals. And I think the one everybody got most excited about was a mouse deer. So mouse deer, they're the smallest sort of antelope species. They weigh about 2 kilos. And I think the only way I can describe their calf or their form is it's like imagine a hamster on stilts. Like they're really, really diddy. So yeah, everybody's very excited about that and we're very excited to let the public see him.
Yeah, as a vet talking to another vet, you can't let it go without asking, give us your most interesting case that you've seen this year.
Ooh, I don't know if I can pick just one. I feel like every day as a zoo vet is interesting and I'm always learning something. So today, for example, I've been working with our primate keepers with one of our Siamangs, which is a type of gibbon. So we have an older lady who we would like to health check now that she's getting on in age, just a general health check. And we've been training her to receive a hand injection for her anaesthetic. It's a bit like in domestic animals. We know that the smoother and less stressful the induction is, the better the anaesthetic and the recovery will be. And that has been great. I feel like I've been on a bit of a journey with her. So in the beginning, she was very wary of me. Then she became a bit more trusting of me. And then I poked her with a stick and then the trust was gone again and I feel like I've now managed to buy it back using some mango as a reinforcer. So I always enjoy when I get to spend time with her. I've been doing quite a lot with the rhinos over the last 12 months as well. So again, we've got an older lady, Rhino Kiri, who we suspected had arthritis. So we x-rayed her lower limbs. So obviously it's quite difficult to x-ray a rhinoceros because of how big they are. But we're able to confirm that she does have some arthritic change in her lower limbs. And we've put together a management program for her. And what else have we done? Giraffe. We've trained a giraffe for conscious head x-rays to check teeth. Because it's a bit like in our domestic animals. You know, we know that there are things that could become a problem as they get older. But it's more difficult, I think, in some ways to be proactive with our animals because you can't just walk up to them and look in their mouths. So we're trying to really move towards getting our animals to take part in their veterinary interventions willingly. So we're doing a lot with training. So, we've managed to train some of our giraffes to have conscious head x-rays, which has been great because that makes such a big difference to our work. And when we say training, we're only getting animals to carry out certain behaviours to help with husbandry or veterinary interventions. It's not like we're training them to sort of entertain anybody or take part in a show.
So, Jane, that's fascinating. If you're in the Marwell area, go to the zoo, have some fun. Thank you very, very much for spending time with us again.
And that's it for another episode of the Vet Podcast. All of our links are in one place at bio.fm/vetpodcast. On behalf of me, Brian Greger, and everybody else involved in the making of this podcast, thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.